You're watching Health Matters on Notepad, a segment that will focus and showcase some of the elements of health issues. We are combining this show. Health Matters was a standalone show before this. And of course, Notepad is my show. We're just combining the two together because what's better than two but in one? Uh-huh. So in this segment, we're going to be showcasing some of the interviews that our colleague over at BizTech Asia is doing. For today, we shall have that conversation between Brian Fernandez of BizTech Asia with Dr. Joel Low, the director and clinical psychologist, talking about some of the mental health issues that is surrounding the country. Enjoy the conversation.
So I'm a clinical psychologist and I run The Mind with a business partner of mine. His name is Ka Leong. And The Mind's been running for about 7 years now, right? So as a clinical psychologist, my main duties at the company are to see clients, right? So I see a wide range of clients, anywhere from children as young as 5, 6 years old, all the way to geriatrics who are about 67 years old, with issues like depression, anxiety, stress, you know, anxiety, panic disorders and things like that, right? I also find myself doing a lot of educational ventures, like training programs, talks like this, for example, and things like that, because that's a big passion of mine. I want to teach and I want to share about psychology, what mental health is, what mental wellness is, for example, because I do believe that the more people know, the healthier they can try and achieve to be, in that sense. So that's a bit about me, I guess.
Okay, and before we go on, could you tell us the difference between what a clinical psychologist is and a psychiatrist? Because a lot of people use that interchangeably.
Yeah. I'll probably throw in one more into the mix as well, counselors. Because I think in Malaysia, especially, these are the three major professions that we have when we deal with our mental health in Malaysia. So let's start with counselors. So counselors are basically psychotherapists, like clinical psychologists, right? And the main difference between a psychologist and a clinical psychologist and a counselor and a psychiatrist is the mode of treatment, right? So with counselors and clinical psychologists, we typically focus on talk therapy. So your typical counseling kind of skills, psychotherapy kind of skills. So basically what you see in Hollywood, like, you know, you lie down on a couch and tell me about what's going on and things like that, right?
Yeah.
While the psychiatrists, especially here in Malaysia, there's some variations in the States and the UK and Australia and things like that. But in Malaysia in particular, most psychiatrists will be focused more on the medication aspects, right? So, you know, your antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications and things like that. Yeah. So when you look at the two, the divide between the two, so counselors and clinical psychologists work on the psychotherapy, psychological aspects. The psychiatrists will be focusing more on the biological, medical aspect of things, right? And the main difference between counselors and clinical psychologists is that while counselors typically focus more on the day-to-day kind of issues, you know, stress management, anxiety from work, communication issues, relationship issues, and things like that, a clinical psychologist will do all of that. But also we look at the more clinical aspects of things, like so schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, OCD, for example, and things like that, right? So that's the distinguishing, the difference between the three different fields, like counselors, clinical psychologists, and psychiatrists.
Okay. Now, this pandemic has hit people hard and mental health issues have really come into the forefront. In the past, of course, in Asian societies, you tend to sweep these under the carpet. So can you tell us a little bit in terms of what your professional experience has been in the last 1.5 years in terms of dealing with patients and also in terms of the profession as a whole in terms of awareness?
So I think I'll start with the latter because I think that's easier to address, right? I think this whole pandemic, the lockdowns, especially here in Malaysia, where we've had a pretty long lockdown compared to the rest of the countries in the world out there, right, is the fact that the idea of good mental health, emotional health, psychological health has really come to the forefront. Because I think a lot of times while we are able to take care of, by and large, a lot of the physical aspects of safety and health while we're at home, being cooped up at home, being away from family, not being able to access the typical coping mechanisms or resources that you like to do pre-COVID, right, means that there are a lot of people who are stressed out and they don't have any good avenues to reach out or to overcome that stress in that sense, right? So what you do find is that you see a lot of psychologists and counselors and psychiatrists as well being very high demand to share about what good mental health is, how do we preserve mental health, how do we encourage mental wellness, for example. And it's a good thing, right? Because like I said, you know, one of my passion points is that the more people know, the more people can ask good questions, and the more they ask questions, the more they can seek help and treatment for themselves if need be, right? So that's what you tend to see. A lot more people asking this kind of good questions and wanting to know more about psychology, which is never a bad thing. Now, unfortunately, that also means that there is also a greater demand on our services, right? And that's something that you see, the trend that we see in the mental health field of late, where there are a lot more people who are seeking for therapy and services and wanting for coming for sessions. Because I think, you know, like it or not, this pandemic has hit us every way possible, not just physically, health-wise, financially, but psychologically, emotionally as well. You know, for example, we get quite a number of expat clients who come in to see us because it's been a year and a half, 2 years since they last went back home, right? And just being physically away from family members can be so debilitating in that sense, right? So yeah, you do see a quite increase in numbers that way.
Okay, Joel, I've got to ask you, if we're all on our own,
mm-hmm,
we're under stress,
mm-hmm,
what are the warning signs? Fear, anger, I mean, walk us through some of them.
I think for ease of reference, I think the two main things that we look out for when we're trying to see whether someone is being affected significantly by the lockdown and the pandemic and things like that is social functioning and occupational functioning. These are the two main things that we look out for, right? So simply put, social functioning means it's our ability to relate or socialize with people, right? How we speak to people, how we interact with our loved ones and things like that. Well, occupational functioning basically means how well we engage with our duties, our work, right? So for you and I, for example, it's the work that we're doing. For younger people, it would be the studies and, you know, studying exams and things like that, right? So when we look at these two aspects, social and occupational functioning, what we're trying to see here is whether there's any significant change. I think that's the key phrase here, significant change.
Okay.
So if you're generally someone who's quite extroverted, very friendly, very warm, jovial person, and suddenly out of nowhere, there's this massive decline where you become very introverted, you become very angry and snappy at people, and you just don't want to be around people anymore. That's all usually a cause of concern, because there's something affecting you enough that you're not your usual self, right?
But Joel, also one of the things is this, the whole situation over the last 18 months, and I can speak for myself as well, the extrovert, the circumstances have basically changed some of my behavioral traits. Nothing to do with stress, but just because of the conditioning that we are in, I've become more of a homebody. I have become a little bit more introverted because I'm absolutely an extrovert. So from a social perspective, I don't think that's a danger sign, but it's more an adaptation and a coping mechanism.
For most people, that is the case. But like I said, these are signs. That means it's not a cause and effect, right? We're not saying that if there is significant change, therefore equals something is bad going on. What we're saying is that if there is significant change, there's a good chance that something is going on, right? There's something that's affecting them. So like for you, for example, you have adapted very well. You're resilient like that. You're flexible like that, right? Psychologically agile enough to transition into becoming a homebody and being okay being at home. Fantastic. That's great, right? So what we're talking about is that if the transition happens, the change happens, but this person is suffering, this person is not going through a good time, it's probably a good indication that we want to just check in and make sure that they're doing all right. Same goes for occupational functioning as well. If they are usually a non-starter, you know, they don't really do much work, you know, the KPI assessments also is usually okay, not too bad, not too good. And suddenly you see a spike in productivity, for example, like they do everything nonstop. They become very manic almost, right? They can't stop doing work and answering emails at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Again, that's another good indication that something perhaps might be wrong. Right, that they're trying to mask the symptoms by working too hard and things like that as well.
But Joel, here's the other end of the equation also. So I can speak again for myself.
Yeah.
I've actually become more productive because there's nothing else to do. So you just work. And I'm working a lot. But what I see among people, so in the last 1.5 years, obviously it's a question of being there for people and trying to help them or supporting them because they need help. So stress and anxiety has come about. You know, it manifests itself in change of appetite, energy, desires. They can't concentrate. Mm-hmm. They can't make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
They have difficulty sleeping. They even then, it manifests also I use the word very ignorantly as hypochondriac. So it's basically things like headaches, body pain, stomach problems. Worsening of their health, chronic health conditions, maybe indulging in more tobacco and stuff like that. So how do we then you know, if we are going through these sort of things, right, how do we cry out for help for somebody like myself? And I've seen this in friends. Obviously, one of the things that you do is you kind of try to point them in the right direction in terms of getting third party help.
So I think obviously getting help is a good way, but that's not always something that everyone is comfortable doing, of course, not at least not at the start. So I think some really simple things that you can do for yourself to manage your emotional and mental wellness during this time is just to make sure that you have a diversity of things to do, right? So like you said just now, you know, now that there's nothing to do, I'm stuck at home all day long, I might as well get some work done, right?
Yeah.
And you're able to channel your energies very productively, which is admirable in that sense, right? But a lot of other people out there can't, right? When they are forced to face one task perpetually, right? It drives them a bit stir crazy sometimes, unfortunately, right? So being able to have a diverse amount of things to do at home, right? Different hobbies, for example, different pursuits, learning different skills, for example, and things like that, gives us that plethora of different experiences that will keep our mind engaged, right? Typically, traditionally, when pre-COVID times, we were able to go out and try things, new foods, new hobbies, mountain climbing, trekking, cycling and whatnot. It's fantastic. Great. But when we are not able to do all that, then we have to try and internalize it at home. What can we do in around the house that would give us similar trends of experiences? Or not similar experiences, of course not, but similar trends in that sense.
We'll go for a short break before we continue our conversation with Dr. Joel, the clinical psychologist. We continue our conversation between Brian Fernandez with Joel Lowe, the director and clinical psychologist, talking about mental health issues.
And Joel, you've got a very good point there, because it's, again, it's about adaptation, right? So in my case, because I'm an extrovert, I used to go out a lot, and then suddenly you're cooped up. My personal coping mechanism has been really about making sure that once a day at least, I go out of the apartment and I do some sort of physical activity. So it is actually when we could only do walks around our area, you walk. Okay. and I'm a cyclist. So that not being able to cycle was a source of kind of a source of anxiety, I would say, to that extent. But then now that we're able to do so, I'm also happier. So I'm able to cycle, and I'm able to then channel my energies to get out of the apartment, because I'm in an apartment complex where in the last 2 weeks, every two or three days, there's some case somewhere.
Right.
Because there's about 600 units in the two towers.
Right.
So you also don't want to go out. You want to be responsible. Yeah. You, even though I'm fully vaccinated. So taking care of myself, I'm actually trying to be a little bit selfish and not go out at all, but doing the right thing. But
correct.
For my mental health and my sanity, I do need to go out once a day.
Yeah. I think you got to try a balance, no matter what it is that you do. Even for introverts as well, people are saying in the start of this pandemic, they're saying, oh, look at the poor extroverts, you know, they're going to be suffering now. Introverts are going to thrive. That's true to a certain extent, but even then, after a while, right, there's such a thing as too much of a good thing in that sense, right? So after a while, even introverts are saying, okay, I'm craving just to go out, have some sun on my body, for example, and things like that, right? So I think it's really about finding a balance on what makes sense for you, what works for you, and trying to get that as much as you can without, like you say, compromising your own health, other people's health, and all that kind of things.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I think what we need to do now, we are in such a difficult situation here in Malaysia. The responsible thing to do is stay away from people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But can I ask you, you know, your advice in terms of how you and how this is manifested with your patients? A lot of times, as an individual, we are faced with people now around us who are going through various types of stresses, whether it's an extra work stress, it is emotional turbulence, it is issues with their family, their marriages, and so forth. So what are the danger signs that we can look out for in order to extend that helping hand with to people at various levels. They could be at the mild stages of stress or even at a stage of stress where they've experienced a near breakdown.
Right, right. I think for those people that we know who are going through mild stresses, you know, and I think when it's this weird relationship you find between the people's ability to talk about their struggles and the difficulties that they're going through. And what I mean by that is, when it's relatively minor, when it's not a big gripe, people tend to talk about it a lot. And that's why people talk about things like, oh, it's so rainy nowadays, it's so hot, traffic is so bad, because it's a relatively mild stressor and people are quite happy to talk about it, right? And then as the thing escalates, right, as it becomes more and more difficult, like a horrible boss, a bad relationship and things like that, what you find is that then the inverse occurs. People start talking about it less, right?
Yes.
So I think for people who are going through minor stresses, you're going to hear about it. They're going to be griping at you, they're going to be complaining at you, you're going to hear it, right? And if you hear this friend of yours or your relative who's doing this quite often, right, you probably want to try and engage them and do things with them, right? And it can be anything from doing a call like this, for example, playing a game online with them, watching a movie together, something, a shared activity in that sense. So at least it's something to take their mind away from whatever that's
okay, so that's interesting, Joel, because you said that that's actually something. Doing a joint activity together online is already a good thing, because it's actually, I never thought of that actually, because when you're doing an activity together, you're supporting the person as well.
Yep, exactly right. And I think as weird as this sounds, I think we are lucky to be having the pandemic now in 2021. Can you imagine if this happened 21 years ago or 30 years ago, for example? We'd all be playing Snake on a Nokia 3310s or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
It'll be much, much worse in that sense, right? So I think as much as possible, just connect with them, do a shared activity together. That's pretty good already. Now, for the people who are on the more extreme end of the spectrum, when you're talking about marital discord and then parenting issues and things like that, right? You typically do find that they start shutting down a bit more, they're a bit quieter, and that's probably some of the signs that you want to look out for. And in those instances, it's not a bad idea just to reach out and say, hey, what's up? How's it going? You want to have a chat? You want to have a meal over Zoom together or whatever it is, right? And just be with that person and see what comes about, right? Sometimes people don't reach out because they're afraid of troubling other people, or they think that, oh, my problem is so minor, it's not worth some other people's attention and things like that, right? So just making yourself available is actually quite comforting, number one. And also, it's almost like an invitation to them, right? Hey, I'm here for you. Do you want to talk about things? Let's talk about it, right? And then from there, it's really depending on your capacity to help. Some people have a more natural therapeutic air about them, a counseling air, so to speak, where people are very happy to talk to you and share about their difficulties, and that's fine, right? Other people are not. They're a bit more awkward in the kind of situations. So if you are the more awkward kind, what you can do is just to have some resources ready, right? This is a number of a therapist that I know, this is the befriender's number, this is some materials they can read, for example. So you don't take on the burden on yourself, you pass it
down. Because we are not trained, right? So
exactly.
We need to also be careful and tread a fine line where we're not steering them in certain directions, we're giving them options, right? I mean, that's correct. A counselor's trick, right? We're basically you give people options. I did some counseling courses in university a long 30 years ago.
Sure.
And it's all about really kind of giving people options, not leading them on.
Yeah, perspectives, options, and things like that. No? And I think another important thing also is that don't ever feel the need have the thought that I have to help, I must help. Because I think that puts us in a very perilous situation. No? If we ourselves are struggling, and we try and help someone who's struggling even more than we are, what's going to happen potentially, instead of having one patient, I'm going to have two, right? So if you're struggling yourself and you know your friend's struggling, don't overextend yourself. Don't say, hey, these are some options, go check it out and see. Let's see where we go with this, right? I think that in on its own, that would be a big, big help for this person already.
Okay. Joel, can we just do a quick recap? And you brought up some really, really interesting points. But could we talk around then as we close this discussion?
Sure.
How do we help prevent or preserve our mental wellness during these difficult times?
I think one of the best ways one best things that we can do to preserve our mental wellness during this time is just to remind ourselves that it's okay to not be okay. right? I think just giving us that permission to go through a rough time, be sad, cry, scream, shout, whatever it is, it's important because we don't want to always keep up this facade where I'm perfectly okay, I'm not affected and all, because we all are, right? No matter how good you are seemingly on the outside. And I think by allowing yourself that permission to be not be okay, then you can have access to all those things that we talked about trying different things, reaching out to people, you know, having a night in where you just eat a tub of ice cream or whatever it is that makes you feel better in that sense. And that way we get to recharge our batteries and then we get to get up next day and fight again.
And Joel, then the second point I want just a recap is taking care of ourselves. I think that's really a priority. What are your thoughts on that?
Definitely a big one. Definitely a big one, especially if you find yourself in a position where you are the breadwinner of the family, for example, you're taking care of multiple people, or let's say you've got family members who've lost incomes and I'm helping them out, for example, right? Then it creates this scenario or situation where you feel that you cannot fail, you cannot give up, you cannot have a weak moment, so to speak. And that puts so much pressure on someone, right, that eventually you're going to crack just because of that, right? So I think taking that time off to be by yourself, to meditate, if that's the way, that way you're that way inclined, to do yoga. For you, Brian, you cycle, for example. For me, I like to be tortured by watching Arsenal play football because they're horrible
okay,
team.
I'm a Liverpool fan, so I laugh at you, okay?
I think that's fine, no problem. So whatever it is that rocks your boat, go do it, spend time and recharge yourself, give yourself the permission to say, I need to be okay. I need to take care of myself. Even if it's buying a PlayStation and playing games or whatever it is, if you have the capacity to go for it, right? Because that will then give you that space to get yourself back on your feet, and then you can keep going again. So that's really, really important.
And Joel, third point, just to recap again, what do we need to do when we need to give and reach out and give people a helping hand? What are the things to look out for and how can we help others in distress?
Yeah, I think for that one, look out for people who are going through, obviously the more vocal ones will tell you that they're struggling and then we can reach out from there. But for those of them who are a bit more quiet, look for people who are showing significant signs of change in the way they interact with people or the way they function on a day-to-day basis. And if you do notice that, and if you're worried about someone, just check in. Just say, call them up and say, hey, how is it going? What's up? Don't text them. Don't send them a message, but give them an actual phone call or a video call, right? I think that's a lot better way to connect with someone. And just making yourself available to them if you're able to, right? So going back to the second point about self-care, you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you burn yourself out as well, right? So if you're able to, if you're really and willing and open to sharing with this person, make yourself available and say, hey, I'm here. If you want to shout, you want to talk about something, give me a call, right? And then we'll see what we can do about it.
And Joel, final words from you before we end this conversation.
I think my final words would be this. We're all stuck in a rut, right? I think the pandemic, the lockdown has made us, as a country, as a population, we're all very fearful, we're all very scared, and the uncertainty of it all is a big killer as well. I think the human mind, it's a lot of things, but dealing with uncertainty is one thing that it does not like to do, right? And I think given the fact that this is a never-ending uncertainty, because we don't know when it's going to end, we don't know whether there's going to be more variants of COVID, whether we'll be okay going out or not, and things like that, I think allowing ourselves to be okay, try to start getting used to that uncertainty, it's going to be really important. Telling ourselves that it's going to be okay, it's going to be all right, let's see what happens. Try not to plan too much and things like that, right? So if I were to summarize all the things I just said is, take one day at a time, right? Do what you need to do to recharge your batteries and give yourself permission to be not okay now and then. At least that way you can recharge your batteries.
Joel, it's been a fascinating conversation and I learned a lot from this. Thank you very much for taking the time to be on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Brian.
I hope that was a very fruitful conversation and for you to enjoy. Of course, we would encourage you to reach out to us. Just tweet to me directly at IbrahimSaniNet, or you can reach out to me at my IG, also same username at IbrahimSaniNet, so that you can actually discuss a little bit more on the ongoings of health issues on Notepad. Until then, I wish you all the best and enjoy your weekend. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.